available on digital media, iTunes podcast, smartphone apps, and from the online website. This is Outlook, the talking newspaper for Coventry.
Hello and welcome from me, Nigel Hewin, to this week's Outlook, being recorded on Wednesday, the 22nd of October, 2025. And well, what's coming up this week? Well, we're going to go to a village I've never heard of before. It's called Newton Regis. I don't even know where it is, so I'm desperate to find out. Elaine's going to tell us all about that later. There's a second part of the Highclere Castle story from Margaret. We're going to find out about a building in Coventry, the first in the world, built from the top floor down by using jacks as they did each floor. And where does road grit come from? We're about to go into winter. It's an important factor, I guess, for you, for all of us. And then, of course, there's also the sport, postbag, and news from here at the Hub. But as ever, we're going to start with a roundup of the local news with Elaine and Jeremy.
Outlook News. A theatre company that has been operating in Coventry for more than three decades says its last ever show was a very special goodbye. Theatre Absolute performed its final production, The Walking Man, at Coventry Cathedral over three evenings last week. Based in Coventry since 1993, the company created the UK's first shopfront theatre in the former Fishy Moore's chip shop in 2010. The firm told the BBC they were stopping production because it felt like the right time. The one-woman show, written by Chris O'Connell and directed by Erica Wyman, starred EastEnders actor Claire Corbett. Mr. O'Connell said the pressure of trying to sustain an independent theatre company had become harder in current times. He said, "We felt we had to acknowledge the reality of that, which means we will sadly close the company with this final new work. However, we're not going away. As artists in our own right, Julia and I won't stop listening to the city's communities and will continue to respond creatively through other future projects." Julia Negus, producer at the company, said she was proud to have been part of a unique Coventry theatre company. Ahead of the performances, she added, "We hope to see some new and perhaps older familiar faces in the audience. It's going to be a very special goodbye."
A new initiative offering free cardiopulmonary resuscitation and defibrillator training has been launched and is aimed at all communities across the West Midlands, including Coventry. West Midlands Ambulance Service said the programme had a particular focus on areas experiencing health inequalities. A spokesperson added, "The campaign aims to give everyone the skills and confidence to save a life in an emergency, ensuring that no community is left behind. The training is open to all residents, community groups and organisations, and will be delivered by the Trust's Community Response Team. Sessions will cover how to perform effective CPR, how to use a defibrillator, and how to control severe bleeding until emergency help arrives." The campaign was launched after NHS Charities Together awarded the initiative a grant of just over £140,000 from its £1.85 million Community Resilience Grants Fund in partnership with OMES. WMAS Community Response Manager Cliff Medlicott said, "The offer is open to any community group, volunteer group, school or business in the area covered by the West Midlands Ambulance Service." He added, "Every second counts when someone's heart stops or when there's severe bleeding. By giving more people in our communities the knowledge and confidence to act, we can dramatically improve someone's chance of survival."
The appearance of flags and graffiti in Earlston and across the country, intended to suggest anti-refugee and immigration sentiments, may have been upsetting and disappointing to many, but one local group has decided to do something about it. Members of Coventry's Flawed Mandrake Theatre Group got together at Earlston Library with friends and supporters to make and display their own flags and banners with a different message, one of welcome and inclusion. Pippa Church of Flawed Mandrake said the group felt that the flags in Four Pounds Avenue and the aerosol graffiti on Earlston pedestrian crossings were deeply un-British, suggesting divisiveness and exclusion. "We decided to make and fly our own flags," she said. "It's gentle activism, and it's beautiful." Using donated materials and getting together at venues including the cathedral and the library, people of all abilities helped create the flags and banners with messages of peace, harmony, unity and welcome. Sadly, not everyone found those messages appealing. Some banners put up in Four Pounds Avenue were removed within 24 hours. Not to be deterred, the group will be holding another flag-making workshop at the library on the 3rd of November. "People can come along in whatever capacity and help," said Pippa. "You don't have to be good at sewing, no craft experience is necessary, just bring your values, your voice, and your creativity." "All materials are provided and," said Pippa, "the experience promises to be a joyful one, especially when outside it may feel less welcoming." The workshop at the library on November the 3rd from 10:30 to 12 noon is free. Just turn up to join in.
A Grade 1 listed building that was once home to a member of William Shakespeare's family has been damaged by a car reversing into it. Horse Croft in Stratford-upon-Avon was damaged last Friday morning after the car backed into it, the Shakespeare Birthplace Trust said. The remarkable 17th century building, once home to the bard's daughter Susanna and her husband John Hall, was already undergoing a significant conservation project to help preserve it. It would now be assessed for repairs with experts. The car backing into the building had been an accident and no one had been injured, and the site has since been made safe. The Trust takes care of several of William Shakespeare's family homes in the town and runs visitor and exhibition centres. Shakespeare was a poet, playwright and actor, born in 1564 in Stratford-upon-Avon, and his plays are still performed all over the world. "Every incident like this reminds us how vulnerable our shared heritage is," the Trust said. "Rising conservation costs and a shortage of skilled craftspeople make it ever harder to protect these remarkable buildings." According to the Trust, the main part of the timbered building was built in 1613. For most of its history, it was the home of prosperous professional people, and in the mid-1800s it served as a small school. The Shakespeare Birthplace Trust bought it in 1949 and, after substantial repairs and alterations, opened it to the public in 1951. There is an appeal underway to help the Trust with its work. If you love Shakespeare and his world, please help us repair and preserve Halls Croft for future generations, the Trust said.
Children from scout groups in Warwickshire have quizzed an astronaut on the International Space Station as it passed over the Midlands. The event was organised by amateur radio enthusiasts, with children able to ask questions about life in space during an 8-minute communication window. The scouts, cubs and beavers from a marquee at Hatton Country World near Warwick put their queries to ISS astronaut Johnny Kim. They wanted to know what astronauts have for breakfast, how they wash, what happens when they drop something, and about the funniest thing that has happened to them in space. "It's a true privilege to have been chosen to make contact with the ISS," said Gavin Gill, a beaver team leader with a county scout group, which secured financial and logistical support for the event. "I'm so excited to speak to real astronauts in space. We've been learning about space at Cubs," said 8-year-old Owen. Kieran Morgan from Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, or ARIS, who helped make the link-up possible, said it went very well. We had a very good contact with Johnny Kim on the space station. We were picking him up around 2,500 kilometres away. It was a bit scratchy and a bit noisy to begin with, but the signal got much better, he said. An experiment with television from the space station took place as well, so we were able to ask Johnny to give us a wave. ARIS is a group of international volunteers who work with space agencies to link children with the space station, with the aim, they say, of getting them excited about science, technology, engineering and mathematics.
Hundreds of blueprints of old Land Rover, Triumph and Mini vehicles have been saved from the shredder and turned into contemporary artwork. French artist Alain Roulier has used the drawings, originally kept in the British Motor Museum archives before being stored, to create pop art pieces celebrating the West Midlands region's motoring legacy. The drawings were left languishing in storage for 20 years, and most were ultimately going to be dumped, before the artist managed to save as many as he could. His agent, Edwina Lightfoot, said, "A free exhibition of the reworked pieces opens at the Courtyard Gallery in Solihull on the 5th of November. The rare blueprints, which include Leyland and MG models, were collected from the museum in Gaydon about 2 decades ago by British Motor Heritage. They were kept in a basic storage facility and over time began to rot and degrade, with many ready to be thrown away and shredded, until the unit was reopened and the company set about preserving them." Alain Roulier, the industrial artist, who has worked with aerospace firms, became aware that they may be lost and was allowed to retrieve what he could to use in his art and collaborate with the company. He's combining his artwork with the history of the Midlands motor industry, and now people can own that, she added. The former graffiti artist and French aircraft mechanic has added bold patterns and colours around the prints with his signature black and white motifs, according to the gallery. "I've worked with the history and spent countless hours researching stories," the artist said. "It's an honour to collaborate with British Motor Heritage and contribute my artistic vision to their legacy. I'm inspired by the chance to push the boundaries of automotive design and create something unique that resonates with all audiences."
The UK's first ever seed relay is being launched by the Warwickshire-based charity which looks after the National Collection of Heritage Vegetables. Garden Organic, based in Ryton-on-Dunsmore, is marking its 50th anniversary with the relay, which will see heritage vegetable seeds shared, sown and saved across the country to highlight the work of the Heritage Seed Library, or HSL, in safeguarding food security and genetic diversity. The first leg of the seed relay began last week in Bocking in Essex, where the seed of the HSL itself was first sown. During the giant 50th birthday Pass the Parcel event, the heritage seeds will travel more than 180 miles to be shared among key individuals, organisations and communities across England before finishing at Garden Organic. At each stop-off point, supporting seed champions will take a packet of seed from the Golden Anniversary parcel to grow and eventually harvest and save before passing the rest of the seeds on to the next destination. A Garden Organic spokesperson said, "A changing climate and decline in insects, including pollinators, is making our food security more precarious. We need to conserve the widest variety of vegetable seeds as possible to ensure the survival of homegrown food crops." The HSL is the only living library of heritage vegetables in the UK and the only seed library that conserves food by sharing heritage seeds with gardeners and communities. by sharing and growing out the seeds with community partners across the UK, the seeds become more resilient and better adapted to climate change and local conditions. Fiona Taylor, Chief Executive Officer of Garden Organic, said, "This work is a continual relay between places and generations to ensure the survival of heritage vegetables. Passing seed on to be grown by friends, neighbours and future generations is a simple action that gardeners and growers can take to ensure our food crops adapt to climate change. By passing seed on and sowing it in a variety of places, we're allowing it to survive and thrive."
Major roadworks to allow a cycleway to be built in Coventry will see a road becoming one way for 9 months. Construction of the Binley cycleway will see a section of Clifford Bridge Road affected, with the measures taking effect from this week until the end of May 2026. Residents tried unsuccessfully to stop the cycleway from being built, saying the design was dangerous for motorists getting off their drives and having to move their cars over the cycleway. The City Council has said several teams will be working to ensure the cycleway is built as quickly as possible, with pedestrian routes also in place. A diversion route for traffic will also be in place, with vehicles directed along the A46 Eastern Bypass and then down the A428 Brandon Road. But Dawn McCann, a local resident who lives close to the road, said the work will have a big effect on the area. "The impact on traffic will be colossal. The council could have waited another week until the half-term holiday, which would have halved the initial traffic and given people a week to get used to the fact that they need to make a detour." The council's website states, "We will start work on the section along Clifford Bridge Road between the A46 Link Road roundabout and the junction with Brinklow Road near St Bartholomew's Church. This section will require a diversion, but traffic towards the hospital will be maintained. Traffic towards the city centre will need to follow the diversion route via the A46 as shown on the plan. Several teams will be working on this, and the closure of one lane for phase two will ensure we can complete the work as soon as possible. Pedestrian routes will be available and maintained throughout both phases. Once the work is complete, the council will plant 32 new trees along the route. Public transport will be diverted for the phase two work."
Age UK Coventry in Warwickshire will be offering a helping hand to older people to help stay warm and well this winter. The charity will be delivering its Warm Homes programme to support those who struggle during the winter months, helping to mitigate the effects of fuel poverty and cold-related ill health. The programme, funded by Octopus Energy, will focus on supporting older people who have energy-inefficient housing and or who are on a low income. The charity will be providing a benefit entitlement check service to see whether there is any financial help that older people are entitled to that they may be missing out on. The service consists of one-to-one sessions with older people to help increase their income by making sure they are receiving all the benefits they're entitled to, as well as support through the benefits application process. Over the years, the Warm Homes programme has delivered nearly 300,000 benefit checks across the UK, supporting more than 180,000 older people and identifying unclaimed benefits totalling nearly £541 million, which averages at around £3,200 per person each year. Deborah Sheriff, Service Manager at Age UK Coventry in Warwickshire, said, "Winter is a really difficult time for many older people, and the Warm Homes programme can be vital in helping those in our local area to stay warm and healthy throughout the colder months. Lots of people are unaware of additional benefits they could be receiving, So please do get in touch with us if you think you could be eligible or if you'd like to find out more. To learn more about the Warm Homes programme and to see if you are eligible for a benefit entitlement check, you can call 02476 23199. That's 02476 23199.
A charity that breeds and trains guide dogs has welcomed its largest litter for 3 years. 13 puppies, affectionately known as the Baker's Dozen. The 13 new additions to Guide Dogs HQ in Leamington Spa, Warwickshire, have been given bakery-themed names, inspired by sweet and savoury treats. The boys are Biscuit, Crumble, Bagel, Crumpet, Rye, Tiger and Pretzel. And the girls are Apple, Eccles, Cocoa, Chelsea, Custard and Ginger. Janine Dixon, Breeding and Welfare Operations Lead at Guide Dogs, said counting puppies during pregnancy was tricky, so staff did not know that Mum Yori had quite so many buns in the oven. The cost of breeding, raising and training each guide dog can go up to £77,000, according to the charity, meaning the Baker's Dozen could cost just over £1 million. The charity said it hoped each pup would go on to offer independence to someone with sight loss. The base is home to the largest breeding programme for assistant dogs in the world. Leamington Spa has been a national base for the Guide Dogs charity since the 1940s and is now home to the largest breeding programme for assistance dogs in the world. Katie Wild O'Neill, Guide Dogs Breeding Advisor, said, "We breed 1,300 dogs a year, so we obviously need lots of dedicated volunteers with that, and we do have some amazing volunteers who will continue to puppy raise for us. The 13 puppies will now be allocated to puppy raisers around the UK to help turn them into life-changing guide dogs by 2027. Puppy raiser Mona Farquhar has helped raise 11 puppies in total for the charity. She admitted it is difficult to give the dogs back after spending a year with them, but said, "You do it because you know someone else can have a guide dog. So if you can give 1 year of your time, someone can have 8 years of a dog to guide them." The litter is the biggest at Guide Dogs since 2022, when German Shepherd Unity surprised the charity with a record-breaking 16 puppies.
A new community history book has been released to capture the history and vibrant spirit of a Coventry neighbourhood. The Holbrooks Community Care Association launched Our Holbrooks, Stories from Our Past and Present by Our People at the city's branch of Waterstones. The publication is a compilation of local stories and recollections that aims to showcase how the community grew to include a colourful mixture of cultures and beliefs, as well as some famous personalities. The launch was attended by Coventry's Lord Mayor, Councillor Rachel Lancaster. She said, "This is a heartfelt collection of memories from local residents, documenting the area's growth, shared community experiences and a bygone time. Speaking as a proud Holbrookian, it's an honest, inspiring account of how people worked together to build the vibrant community we know today. I hope it encourages every resident to continue sharing and celebrating our unique past." The book is available at both Waterstones and on Amazon.
Outlook News.
And my thanks for your newsreaders, Elaine and Jeremy. Now, lighting up and lighting down. Sunrise at the moment is 7:35 in the morning, and sunset is 5 to 6 in the evening. Now, I think I'm right in saying this weekend the clocks change. So don't forget, clocks go back an hour on this Saturday night. Now, I've also got a few theatre things, two adult ones and four children's ones, actually. The adult ones, firstly, Born in the Sea. Richard Venguette's A Timely Consideration of What Drives Populist Politics, and that's on Tuesday the 28th at the Albany Theatre. And also Friends, the musical parody, stage production based on the much-loved TV show, and that is from Tuesday the 28th to Saturday the 1st of November at the Belgrade. Now, as I say, there are children's ones as well. The Little Yak, uplifting tale of self-acceptance told via puppetry and music, based on Lou Fraser's award-winning children's book, and that's on Thursday the 30th of October at the Belgrade. The Hare and the Tortoise, a charming adaptation of Aesop's fables about friendship, opposites and growing up, suitable for audience members aged 3 to 8 on Friday the 31st at the Albany Theatre. Grandad Anassi, an uplifting tale of love, courage and letting go, suitable for audience members aged 4 to 9 on Friday the 31st at the Belgrade. And finally, Real Life Halloween Horror. John Adam Wood on Halloween night for real life tales of terror from Coventry long ago. Halloween costume wearing is encouraged, with a prize awarded for the best outfit. That's on Friday the 31st at the Albany Theatre. Now, that's some entertainment for you. I can see Hugh's beaming with me to be. I think he's going to go to the Halloween one.
Well, yeah, well, maybe not. I think you can definitely tell the half-terminess of those events,
can you?
Can't
you? Absolutely right. Yeah, so, yes, what's on here then? Adult world.
It's horror upon horror is right. What's on here. It's all good stuff.
Good.
Let me just reiterate the point about diaries. We're going to be making an order for VIP diaries. That order will be placed next week. It won't be the last opportunity, but it's a very good opportunity for you to get hold of your diary. A6 diary is going to be £7.15. A5 diary is going to be £9.35. And A4 diaries are going to be £11.55. They're very bold print, so certainly for people with partial sight, they've got lots of space to write in, even the little ones, surprisingly, the pocket-sized ones, they're quite good. There's also A3 calendars available as well. Give a ring to us on 024-7671-7522 and speak to whoever be on reception that day, and they will jot down your order. We'll be ordering a few extras just in case. Now, the Winter Warmer is taking place on the last Saturday of November, which is the 29th. Yeah, yes. I'm just looking at Elaine, who knows everything. On the 29th of November here. So we are going to be having a whole bunch of stalls and some refreshments and entertainments. We're going to try and liven it up a little. We were just discussing about how we might do that. Haven't quite decided yet, but anyway, that's going to be happening on that day. There will certainly be plenty of food, I know, because I'll be cooking it. What we would like, though, is some contributions for the tombola, if you would be so kind. If anybody has bottles or bottly-shaped things, or smallish nice things that will go into bottle bags, or small gift bags. So if you've been given a mixed bag of toiletries or whatever that you haven't used, those presentation boxes that people often get for presents, and you don't want them, then very much so we would. So thank you very much if you would be very kind and donate whatever you can towards the tombola. We would be very happy to have them. There will be jams and what have you on sale now. You and Marjorie is very good at providing a lot of jams. I've offered a little contribution myself this time, so there are
Flavor
seven jars of quince jelly, and then some apple and chili jelly, and some other, I think some marmalade from earlier this year. Anyway, so there's a number of jars of my own devising that are going to be in there. So that's got to be a draw for everybody, isn't it? But anyway, Marjorie's jams sell extremely well all the time. Now, I've mentioned this before, we have accessible voting workshop that takes place on Monday the 3rd of November here at the Vision Hub in the Mary Beale Room. So this takes place from 10:30 till 1 o'clock, so it's going to run at the same time as the Monday Club, so if you want to come to one, you can't go to the other. The accessible voting workshop will tell you how you can vote using machines and your rights as a person with visual impairments to be able to vote in private and without other people. There's all sorts of ways of doing that. And it's a workshop that's been arranged by the City Council in association with RNIB, but I say it's taking place here. What they really would like is some idea of numbers. I know a number of people have expressed an interest to me about it, so I would be very grateful if you would like to come to that workshop to give us a call, and just to let somebody on reception know that you are intending to come, because if they don't get enough people, then they won't run it. But I think it would be a very useful thing to come and find out about, because voting is for everyone, and so it should be. Nigel mentioned a little bit earlier about the clocks changing this weekend. Now, a lot of people who are very good with their smartphones and what have you and all sorts of tech do not need any help with the hours changing on their devices. Some of you, however, have got gloriously dumb or not so dumb talking watches that are not connected to the magical waves up in the air, and therefore might need a bit of help in changing the clocks, changing the watches. It goes back an hour. If you need any help with that, we are always available here. Heather and I are past masters at getting these watches to show the right time. Been doing it for years, so bring them in and we will sort you out in no time at all. Finally, we received a notification this morning an accessible art exhibition that's going to be taking place in Nuneaton at the Nuneaton Museum and Art Gallery, which is in Riversleigh Park in Nuneaton. And this is an exhibition called Made in the Middle. So it's contemporary crafts from the Midlands. And it sounds really nice. There's a lovely picture of a bit of very modern style basket weaving, but it looks very tactile. Anyway, they are going to, on the Thursday the 6th of November at 2:30 p.m. They are going to be offering an audio description tour of the exhibition, so you can immerse yourself in an interactive tour with audio description from Tim Calvert. It's free, and if you want more details, you can go to their website, craftspace.co.uk, or email info@craftspace.co.uk, or you can send a WhatsApp if you've got that technology to 07394 745 865. I'll give you that number again, 07394 745 865, to book your place. And they say very helpfully, tea and coffee provided.
And it's on till the end of November.
Is it? Yes, on till the end of November. Oh, you know, you do know absolutely everything, don't you? It's great. It's fantastic.
She pre-reads all your notes, I think.
Yeah, she probably... Well, that's more than I do. So there are 10 places to book, and I think... I think it sounds quite good, actually. It looks like it might be a really interesting exhibition.
And their cafe gets a good write-up.
Oh, the cafe does. Excellent. Well, there is, in fact, for many art galleries, there is no better place than the cafe. No, it's not true. Right, and that, dear friends, is it for this week.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you next week. And from news at the Hub to news of sport with Sarah.
Well, hello there, very lovely listeners. Sarah's in a good mood. I wonder why. Right, I'm going to start with football. And these are, I'm mentioning, in the order in which they took place. First of all, England had a World Cup qualifier last Tuesday against Latvia. And they thumped Latvia 5-0. And the great thing is that that means that England have already qualified now for next summer's World Cup. The thing I'm not so comfortable with about this World Cup is that it's in a combination of the USA, Canada and Mexico. And no doubt they'll big up their green credentials, but just think of all that air travel. Oh well, they'll have to go by coach, It's also quite seriously going to be extremely hot, and I think our players will have to do training in plastic suits. Now on Saturday, the mighty Coventry City played Blackburn Rovers at the CBS. You might remember that I told you that going into the international break, we were top of the league and we would stay like that till the break finished. Well, actually, we slipped to second the preceding night, i.e. Friday night, simply because Middlesbrough, who we'd leapfrogged, played on Friday night and had the audacity to win. So, could we win to reclaim our position on top? It was actually the first time, I think, in recent years, when as a City fan, I actually felt quite comfortable going into this match, and I was really looking forward to it. The commentators on CWR had actually talked about, well, Blackburn will just come and park the bus and basically play for a draw, defend at all costs. But my gosh, in the first half, they did anything but. And to say it was rather uncomfortable. Jokingly, it's a good job Celia Emery wasn't in the audience, although she might have been in the crowd, because if she had have been, the air would have been extremely pungent. Anyway, we were very fortunate to go in at half-time 0-0. The second half actually began pretty much as the first half. And you just thought, how long can City hold on for? Well, until just shy of the hour, actually. But no, it wasn't Blackburn who scored. It was City, through a fantastic torpedo shot straight into the top right-hand corner of the Blackburn goal by Victor Torpedo Talk. And it got even better 3 minutes later, I ask you, when BTA, young Brandon Thomas Asante, scored an absolute missile. City 2-0 up. Now, at that point, I don't know about part the bus, but Blackburn Rovers seemed to positively go and get on the bus. They just still sort of had basically seemed to have given up. So that was how it finished, with a 2-0 win. And actually, a great sense of disappointment amongst the City fans. I mean, our last three matches, we'd won 3-0, 4-0 and 5-0. Well, I suppose 2-0 sort of completes the set, albeit in the wrong order. And we scored 29 goals in 10 matches, which is a record now going back 90 years. Yes, folks, we is that good. Now, midweek, we travel away to Portsmouth, and we did have a dire time there last year. Well, but then next Saturday, we're at home again to Watford. Now, if you, like me, will be tuning in on CWR, or even better, going to the match, it's a 12:30 kick-off. So, Coventry are back top of the league. We are the only team, remember, in the top five divisions who has not lost a match, has got that wonderful zero down the matches lost column. And furthermore, the Championship does its own league of its top scorers. And City have three out of the top four. In first place, we have a certain American international, Mr. Haji Wright, with 8 goals. And then second equal, along with a player from another team, we have Mr. Victor Torpe and Mr. Brandon Thomas Asante. We also have a goal difference, absolutely fantastic, 22. Now, in the words of Craig Greville-Hallward, City this season so far are amazing. Meanwhile, just looking at our local teams, our non-league teams, or the two I cover, Leamington entertained Darlington, and I bet they wish they hadn't, because they lost again 1-0. But meanwhile, Stratford travelled away to Stamford, but came back with a 2-0 victory. So, quickly changing the shape of ball now. Our Coventry Rugby Club, were away to Chinner, which we are reliably told yesterday by CWR is in Oxfordshire. Can they clean up their act and give away fewer penalties and cards? Well, it all seemed to be going so well by half time. Coventry were leading 19-14 and at one stage had led 19-7. But we let Chinner score a try and convert shortly before half time. But I'm afraid in the second half, Chinner continued where they'd left off and scored another 33 consecutive points. That's 40 consecutive points. Coventry did have a consolation try, but the match finished Chinner 47, Coventry 26. And now I turn to the ODI, the Women's World Cup. Yes, I did say ODI, One Day International. I know I've been calling it the T20, but that's what I heard someone say. And to me, cricket over in one day must be T20 nowadays. But what difference does 30 overs make? Now, the first match that our England lasses played was against Pakistan. They scored a rather mediocre 133 for 9. But then it rained and Pakistan was set a reduced target, which they soon started cruising to once the rain had stopped, reaching 34 for no wicket. But then England heard these precious three words, rain stops play. But I have to say, I'm going to lose all credibility here. I have just listened to the most gripping cricket match I think I've ever heard, and that is England versus India. Now, going into this, India knew that they'd really got to win to stand any chance, whereas England knew that they were pretty much in the next round if they won. Well, England did quite well. They got to 288 for 8. But they knew it was reachable by India. And my gosh, it really looked as if it was going to be reachable. But then some of their wickets began to tumble. and it wasn't too long before I heard the precious words, "Well, they need another 16 runs off 2 overs. Possible. But then it got to 12 runs off 2 overs. Sort of possible. But then 11 runs off 3 balls. Still possible, but... But anyway, the upshot of it was England beat India by 4 runs. It could actually have been more, but I think England were busy celebrating by the time India scored their last boundary and just let it trickle over the boundary line. Just quickly now, golf. In the Indian Championship in Delhi, well done to England's Tommy Fleetwood, who won yet another PGA title. And finally, this made me laugh. When Coventry City played Blackburn Rovers in 1995, it was in the middle of, shall we say, a snowstorm, with the snow coming on and off, and they elected to play with an orange ball. Fine, you might think. Well, it was all going so well, but then, sort of against run of form, the Blackburn Rovers goalie conceded 3 goals. At half time he was taken off. He wasn't injured. He was colour blind and couldn't differentiate between the orange and the falling white stuff. Oh well, it happens to us all. Anyway, folks, that has been your sport for this week. Have a great week. Don't get too wet. Bye.
Thanks, Sarah, as ever, for sports report. And now let's find out from Dave on what he's got in your postbag for this week.
This is Postbag. Join in the discussion.
Hi there, and welcome to your postbag. We begin with a message from Henny, a volunteer at Baggots Castle in Baggington. And it's to Pat Mulqueen Wood.
Pat Mulqueen Wood, I know her very well, and her lovely guide dog, who she lost some time ago, maybe 2 years now. Time flies, so I cannot put a date on the time, but it was a sad event. But she is a lovely lady looking for a new dog for helping her around.
I hope you like that, Pat, that message. And this week, Doreen replies to Graham Whale about the sad news of the death of a helper with Coventry Reader Service for the visually impaired.
Hello everybody, Doreen Hilton here speaking to you all again. A very, very special thank you to Graham Whale. I know it wasn't very nice, Graham, but you did let everybody know who knew Margaret Obley. Yes, Doreen was one of those people who knew Margaret Obley very well and had dealt with the reading service many years ago before the lockdown. And I would like to say I was very sorry to hear her because she was a very loving, very beautiful person. And has she come to the meetings of the reading service, she did very well. Any question you wanted to ask her, she always timed to know the answer. And also, I did get into touch with Linda Obley, and she did tell me that she had a nice service and a nice sending off, which was very nice to hear. But I'm very sorry I could not get to the service, which I'd like to. And all I can say that she's at rest now, and, you know, I'm sure family and friends and everybody who knew her thought about her as she was a really wonderful person. And as for Linda Brodie, she does do well to get in touch with her for the reading service. And the reading service is a very good thing to have, because it's not everybody who can go on the internet. She did tell me that she was, Margaret was a lady of 94, so she did very well. And I did say, as for Linda, I'd get in touch with her after Christmas if I needed a reader again. The reader I had at the time was Jill Timms, but unfortunately now she is getting on in age, like we always do. And my reader, Jill Timms, she is a lady of 93. And I did like coming to the reading service meetings. So Graham, I do thank you very much. And I'll be sure there's quite a few more who did know her. So Doreen Hilton, signing off. Take care all. Speak to you soon. Bye.
Thank you, Doreen. Here's Graham with a reminder about that helpful service.
I thought it's about time perhaps I said a few words about the Coventry Reader Service, as we do have an excessive number of readers rather than over listeners at the moment. It's a service which is available for blind and partially sighted people in the Coventry area. They are volunteers. They have to go through certain processes to make sure that they're genuine people and they're not going to come into your home and nick anything. And, you know, correspondence, maybe, magazines, newspapers. Perhaps you don't need a regular reader. Maybe you perhaps only need one about once a month or a couple of weeks or something like that. I'm sure it can be accommodated. So, think about that. And if you feel you could do with a reader, contact Linda Brodie on 02476 417741, 02476 417741. Or if you get no joy on her landline, try 07966 756 693. Okay. Bye.
Thank you, Graham. Please don't feel that you're troubling the volunteers by asking for this service. If they have no one to read to, they might get tired of waiting and do something else with their time, which would be a shame. So contact Linda Brodie of the Coventry Reader Service, the visually impaired, on 024-76-417-741 or mobile her on 07966-756693. It really is a helpful service. Make use of it. Elizabeth, she's been getting out and about lately, which is great. This week she talks about a visit to the Coventry Music Museum.
Hi everyone. Places of interest to Coventrians of a certain age. Who can remember the specials? Also, a certain old song, Mouldy Old Joe, which was performed by Lieutenant Pigeon. This song was recorded in Coventry by a group whose mother actually accompanied them on the piano in their own home, making the disc. Well, in Ball Hill, I visited the old Music Museum. It is a veritable treasure trove of memorabilia. The actual piano, which was used to perform the song Mouldy Old Joe, is there. The old car used by the specials is there too, with the inscription, Ghost Town. Wow. There is a section regarding Delia Derbyshire, who was responsible for the radiophonic workshop. which created the Doctor Who distinctive music. Pete Chambers was there interviewing two guys, two musicians named Eddie and Josh. Eddie played bongo drums, Josh guitar and vocals. Together they are Flat Badger. After the interview they performed their work. Brilliant. They truly deserve to go places. After the performance, we devoured a delightful Caribbean breakfast. A good day for one and all.
Thank you, Elizabeth. The Coventry Music Museum, which covers all types of Coventry music, is open between Thursday and Sunday. Monday to Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m, Sundays 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. There's a pedestrian crossing on the top of Ball Hill which leads you straight into Two Tone Square, where there's an excellent Caribbean cafe, a Two Tone clothing shop, a memorabilia shop, and of course the museum. On another subject, sometimes when I wake up during the small hours of the morning, I listened to a little radio set, and I just caught the end of the programme the other morning on BBC World Service. It was about Braille. The question was, with all the audio reading devices available, do you still need Braille? One lady replied by saying that when she received the letter in Braille, no one else could read it or hear it. I once wrote to former Blind Home Secretary David Blunkett. I brailed a letter to him, knowing that it would land straight in his hands and not a personal secretary who might fob me off and say something like, "Mr. Blunkett, thanks you for your letter." I had enclosed a cassette tape asking him for his thoughts on shared spaces, but instead he spoke in praise of cassette tapes, and he spoke in praise of listener Dr. Fred Reed and his campaigning on behalf of the visually impaired, as did former Prime Minister Gordon Brown, whom I interviewed once. Well, I'm afraid that's all I've got for you in Postbag. We'll hear from Mary Hart next week, and let's hope you can send something in for next time as well as Mary. And so thank you for your messages this week, and please let's hear from you next time. There's lots of things we could talk about. There's the items relating to the news, or things that help you around the house, places you've been. Well, there's lots of things we could talk about. That phone number, ring the Resource Centre on 02476 717 522, and then press 5 for Coventry Talking Newspaper. That's Coventry Vision Hub, by the way. Okay, and so and also you can send us a letter written by you or someone in your behalf. There's loads of ways you can communicate with us, but the main thing, you say hello to us. Okay, thank you, messages this week, and bye for now.
This is Outlook. You can contact Postbag.
Our website is www.talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Our email address is postbag@talkingnewspaper.org.uk. Join in the discussion on Postbag.
So that's your post back for another week. Do please let's hear from you. Now, Elaine visits Newton Regis, a village I must admit I know nothing about at all.
Newton Regis. This is the northernmost parish in Warwickshire, the name of which probably derives from its former royal ownership under Henry II, who reigned from 1154 to 1189. It has also been known as King's Newton, and, more picturesquely, as Newton in the Thistles, from early in the 18th century. It is not known whether these were abundant wild thistles or specially grown teasels used in the carding of flax fibre for linen production. Flax was grown in Newton, and the linen looms worked in the house, now the Queen's Head Inn. The village boasts another royal connection. King Charles I prayed at the church before going into battle during Civil War. The cathedral in Birmingham was indirectly named after a Newton Regis family. The Phillips family of Newton Hall owned property in Birmingham, and it was Robert Phillips who gave the site of the church, as well as contributing towards its building, which was from 1711 to 1725. St. Philip's Church became the cathedral in 1905, and the Phillips family married into the Inge family of Thorpe Constantine, just over the border in Staffordshire. The church, which contains much of historical interest, was originally a chapel to the church at Seckington. The present building is basically 14th century. A singular feature of the village is the rock, an outcrop of stone worn into terraces alongside the pavement opposite the church. The picturesque duck pond in the middle of the village is a quarry pit into which a stream was diverted. A variety of ducks now benefit from this former water supply to the village. They have had a special sign erected by the council to warn motorists of the habit of the ducks of processing across the road to the farmyard where they live. A recently instituted annual event happens on New Year's Day, where many villagers turn out with their pets for a 3-mile goose walk, named because one of the founders of the walk used to take his goose with him. Now it is mostly dogs and people. The village has a popular pub, the Queen's Head, a village hall and a bowling green. This is one of the least spoilt villages in North Warwickshire, whose imposing farmhouses and half-timbered thatched cottages have not been obscured by recent small developments.
And there's more from Elaine's Village Travels next week. You remember last week Margaret read the first half of the story of Highclere Castle, written by Sam Webster, and now she completes that story.
Prior to Downton Abbey, Highclere Castle was used in Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie's 1990s comedy, the television series Jeeves and Wooster, and in scenes for the 1987 film Secret Garden. Now Downton is adding, would Lady C consider opening her home's doors to another filming crew? Highclere matters to me, she replies. We've had various calls recently and they're just not what I think is right, especially not for those who love Downton Abbey. I meet people here who have watched it 22 times and it means something to them. I receive emails from fans of the show with stories about how their loved one is not at all well and visiting Highclere is on their bucket list before they die. I don't want to muddy that with some reality TV show or project that doesn't respect the Downton legacy. Why should I? It means too much to people for me to allow it to unravel. I personally witnessed the hordes of paying visitors as Highclere is open to the public 5 days out of seven. To escape the crowds, Lady C takes me out to what is commonly regarded as Lady Mary's bench in Downton. But before long, a small crowd begins to form, having recognised the true lady of the manor from previous interviews. She leaps from the bench to spark a conversation with those gathered, instantly putting them at ease. After several exchanges and photos with visitors from around the globe, she explains her goal is to make everyone feel welcome. Lady C continues, I simply love that people can cross the threshold here and wander through the gardens. If you wanted privacy, you would definitely be in the wrong job. Being at Highclere is so important to get on with everybody, and it's been that way for centuries. Visitors and staff, it's a big community here, and that's the joy of it. The castle has received many VIPs in its time, including George Clooney, who filmed a special ITV charity edition of Downton in 2014. As Lady C writes, I sincerely believe that most women who worked at ITV came to Highclere that day. So did the press, but only as far as our gates, as they thought Mr. Clooney might be considering Highclere as a venue for his wedding to then-fiancé Amal. But reflecting on Highclere's open-door policy now, she says we're all part of the same plan. We need people to come and enjoy it so the estate can survive. I'm sort of working for them, the staff as well, to make sure that every month we have enough money to pay them so they can pay their mortgages. We all need each other. In fact, there's a big community relying on the profitability of the house. There's the banqueting team, 1,200 people that serve food. There's the team in the kitchen who are cooking the food for the banqueting teams. There's the office, which is far too small, gardeners, and the list goes on, says Lady C. Despite their best efforts, she acknowledges that Highclere does sometimes get it wrong. Its inbox is a source of much-needed feedback from visitors, and occasionally there is criticism. With her head in her hand, she confesses, paper cups. People do complain about the fact we don't serve our hot drinks in fine bone china they expected from a setup like ours, but it's just not viable. After COVID, we moved to a recyclable option, and we have stuck with it because of the cost and manpower required to keep a clean supply of china, but it doesn't go down well with some. As a compromise, we started stocking paper cups with a lovely map of Highclere on it, so hopefully that will soften the blow for anyone expecting a full tea service. And we do offer afternoon tea, as that is a must-have. The plot of the final film has been finally released. Action, now set in the 1930s, as the Crawleys contend with financial turmoil and the fallout from Lady Mary's scandalous divorce from Henry Talbot, Matthew Goode. That keeps the drama stakes high. As for her own future, Lady C is a philosopher. There's no point doing something like Downton if you don't make the best of it, because otherwise there's been nothing in it for us, she says. So in the end, you do need something called cash. And with a team the size of Highclere's to provide for, a very busy Lady C may well find herself pondering Dame Maggie Smith's famous question in the series.
From one famous building to another. It's the first building ever constructed with the top floor first, then that being raised on jacks, with the next floor down being added underneath, and so on. And it was in Coventry, a building called Alpha House. This was researched by Paul Maddox of the Coventry Society, and this article is one of his which I recorded earlier. Over the past few months, I have been looking at some of Coventry's firsts, from the city with the first traffic-free shopping precinct to the city centre with the first smokeless zone. Coventry has always been the hotbed for trying out new technology and ideas. Right back in 1868, when Rowley Turner, a sales agent at the Coventry Sewing Machine Company, brought a French velocipede cycle from the Paris Exhibition to Coventry to start making copies of them, and then the city improving on the design to opening up the cycle industry and the development of the cycle we have today. It was Coventry that German Daimler Company chose to set up the first British manufacturing of motor cars because of its skilled and technically minded workforce. So again, when the inventor Jans Joost Werner from The Hague in the Netherlands came up with a new novel way of building fast and cheap tower blocks of flats, he came to Coventry. Working with Richard Costain of Costain Construction, his idea was to build the roof and top floor first at ground level on a large number of jacks. It is then jacked up and another floor is built underneath. What is now a two-story block is jacked up another level and the third floor and walls built underneath. The jacking devices act directly on the central core structure, which, together with projecting floors, provides a substantially rigid structure. The jacks raise the building at a rate of half a metre an hour. When all the floors are completed, it is then anchored to the foundations. It was known as the jack block system. So why build it in Coventry? The city was a boom town in the 1950s and 60s with full employment. Loads of people came to Coventry to work, so housing was in very short supply. The Coventry County Borough Council had one of the largest building programmes in history, and one and two bedroom flats were very much needed. So if they could be built quickly and cheaply, the council would try it. The world's first building to be built using the jack block system was Alpha House in Barrow's Heath in 1963. it came as a light bulb moment when I realised why this 17-storey residential tower block of 97 flats was named Alpha House. Alpha is the first letter of the Greek alphabet and is used to designate the first of its kind. An Alpha House is the first of its kind. So what are the advantages of building the Jack Block Way? Besides being quick and cheap, the building would be built on-site in a factory type of way, giving advantages of being able to work in all types of weather, as it was roof that was put on first. Heating and lighting could easily be available, and all trades working on the ground floor level meant that they did not have to have loads of scaffolding, heavy cranes and hoists to get worker and materials up and down the building. As each floor would be completely built, it would be then jacked up and the process would be repeated all over again. Each floor could be completed in about a week or so 16 floors could take only 4 months. Then after final fitting, the building could be ready in 5 to 6 months. But what are the disadvantages? The building process relied on all materials and tradespeople arriving on site and doing their work in a systematic sequence and on time before the floor was jacked up. If there was any delay or work not completed, it could become very expensive, especially if the fault was high up on the outside of the building. There have been approximately 10 buildings in the world which have been built using the system since 1963. Mercia House in the Lower Precinct was the second one in Coventry. So when I was looking for architectural firsts, I was pleasantly surprised that in 1963 the very first block of flats to be made where the roof and the top floor are made first was Alpha House, the Jack Block System Way. In 2010, nearly 50 years after it was built, Alpha House was renovated by the Whitefriars Housing Group at a cost of £1.97 million. The building was overclad with aluminium panels and windows were replaced. Of course, it wouldn't meet modern building regulations if it was built today, having only one core. For its time, it was the most innovative building. What a fascinating and adventurous way of constructing a building. We're now well into autumn, with the trees all shedding their lovely coloured leaves, which means that winter can't be far behind. And with winter comes frost, of course, so roads will need to be gritted. But where does that grit come from? Elaine reads this explanation from the Coventry Telegraph.
As gritting trucks work around the clock across the West Midlands during the first cold snap of the year, spare a thought for the miners who dig the salt out of the ground, almost a mile below the North Sea, and in temperatures that, ironically, can hit 40 degrees centigrade. As for the grime you smear across your windscreen during icy smells, it was created during the Permian period, some 260 million years ago, when a sea covering a swathe of northern Europe evaporated, leaving millions of tons of rock salt deposited under the northeast coast of England. Bulby Mine, near the tourist village of Staithes in North Yorkshire, is one of only two places in England where the salt used on the country's roads is mined. It produces hundreds of thousands of tons for national highways to cover the main routes and for dozens of council contractors to spread across the rest. When it opened in the 1970s, Bulby was the deepest mine in Europe. It remains the deepest in the UK, with two shafts over 1,000 metres deep, leading to hundreds of miles of roadways that descend even further down into the earth. The site was opened as a potash mine, and the rock salt was produced as the miners pushed through the salt deposits to get to the fertiliser product. These days the facility mines a different fertiliser, polyhalite, but Bulby still produces hundreds of thousands of tons of rock salt, with the exact amount varying hugely depending on how harsh a winter the country is experiencing. ICL Bulby chief geologist Thomas Edwards said, I like to tell people that when their cars are a little bit grubby when the roads have been gritted in the winter, that's 260 million year old dirt that's dirtying your cars. 50 years of digging for potash, rock salt and now polyhylite has left more than 1,100 miles of tunnels under the North Yorkshire coast between Staithes and Skinninggrove, and stretching out up to about 15 kilometres under the North Sea, which takes an hour to drive to in a Land Rover.
So, now you know. A couple of weeks ago was World Sight Day, and as you know from previous outlooks, the Hub was there putting on a very special open day to coincide. Dave, of course, was there, and here's his report.
Hello there, it's World Sight Day today, and there's an open day at Coventry Vision Hub, so I'll just pop in and see what's there of interest to visually impaired people. Okay, I'm inside the resource centre. I'm speaking to Kyle at the moment. So what's going on to celebrate World Vision Day at the Coventry Vision Hub?
Oh, all sorts of things. I mean, what isn't going on? We've got Braille and craft group in the tea room there. We've got lots of exhibitors, so you can come and have a look at the Meta Ray-Ban smart glasses and see how they could help with visual impairments. Wow. There's all sorts of things going on.
Hello, I'm speaking to two young ladies on the stall here. So, what are you demonstrating? So what are you talking about?
We're from Citizen Housing, and we're just advertising the support that we give to our tenants with money advice, employment, digital, energy advice, and just.
So, do you have to be a tenant of Citizen Housing?
Yes. Okay. I mean, like today on an open day, we'll speak to anyone and give any advice that they want.
Oh, yeah, but good.
Our daily job is to support citizen tenants.
Okay, what's your name?
My name's Tesh.
And what's your name?
Charlotte.
Charlotte, so what do you do?
So I work for I'm the Digital Inclusions Officer for Citizen, so I support tenants with any digital needs that they have, getting online, getting email addresses, working the computer. Yeah, that's my main job.
Okay, thank you very much, both of you. Thank you. I am talking to a policeman, Gregor Ashfield, who's towering above me. So what brings you to the resource centre? Are you giving advice about security and that?
We can do if anyone approaches us and speaks to us about it, but ultimately we became aware that there was the open day on today, and it was an opportunity to interact with some of the community that we don't always get to speak with and visit and see.
Yeah, wow, they've got a talking air fryer here and talking microwave. Fantastic. Hello, I'm speaking to Chris at the moment. So where are you from?
So I work for a company called Humanware. We're a technology provider for people with a visual impairment. So today I'm showing a range of our technology. So we have some simple magnifiers, which are really easily operatable, using a plus or a minus button. We can also change the colour contrast, and they come in different sizes depending on what you need them for. I've also got our audiobook players, the VictorReader Stratus, the VictorReader Stream, the Hark AI, which is our text-to-speech reader, which will read printed text, handwriting, barcodes. It will give image descriptions and document overviews, and it will also translate foreign languages as well.
Are they quite easy to use?
So we've got customers that are 4 years old, and we've got customers that are 104 years old. And every single one of them has different level of experience using technology. And so it's our challenge to make sure that whatever we provide is really simple and easy to use. We have some more complex things as well, but it's about finding the right thing for that individual.
That's fantastic, thank you very much. So what are the prices start from if you want a portable thing to read, read things on shelves and things like that?
So our smallest magnifier starts at £445, and then as they go up in size, they go up in price. Audiobook players start from £370 £75. Yeah, yeah. The Braille stuff's a little bit more expensive. That's to do with the technology that's involved. And the Braille displays start from about £1,900 up until the most expensive thing here that we've got is our new Monarch, which is a multi-line Braille display. So you can read up to 32 characters, 10 lines of Braille, and you can also access tactile images and tactile graphics on there as well. So, and that was at £14,000. So it goes up in price.
Right. Okay. Do you have a phone number?
Yes. So you can contact us in our offices. We're based in Northamptonshire. Our number is 01933 415 800.
Okay. That Humanware. Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, Chris.
Thank you.
I then met Mac, who was serving in the cafe. And he was serving various items, including posh coffee and also posh cookies. He went on to tell me what he normally does to volunteer at the resource centre.
Okay, so what do you do normally for the resource centre?
So I'm normally here on a Tuesday, part of the walking group, which starts at 11, and also part of the craft group, which is on a Wednesday.
Okay, right. The walking group is extremely popular, isn't it?
Very popular, yeah. So obviously it's weather dependent. So if we have good weather, there's normally about 10, 15 of us all together that come on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Go to Memorial Park for about a good walk for an hour, and then we all meet up at midday for a cup of hot tea or coffee in the cafe.
What time does it start from the Coventry Vision Hub?
So we all meet at the resource centre just before 11, and then we try to aim to set off at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Okay, right.
And then we all walk together to Memorial Park.
Excellent.
Yeah, so there's walk on Tuesday. It starts at 11, I think Wednesday is at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, okay, so Wednesday's 10 o'clock.
Wednesday's 10 o'clock.
It starts.
Yeah.
And it's about 11 o'clock on a Tuesday.
Tuesday, yeah, that's
it. And in the Mary Beale Centre, you can hear the game of Showdown. So you played Showdown?
I have played Showdown before, yeah. It's very difficult.
Okay, can you roughly describe the game, please, briefly?
So it's a player on each side of the table, and you have a paddle in one hand,
yes,
in your dominant hand, and it's probably quite similar to like air hockey, where you have to push a ball that you can hear onto your opponent, onto the other side, to your opponent's little hole, and then you play in a point or two. Yeah.
So Coventry's got their own team, the Coventry Comets. Are you a member?
I'm not good enough to be a member, unfortunately.
Really? Yeah. They have a high standard.
They have a very high standard, yes.
But people are welcome to come along for a kind of social session, playing Showdown for fun, haven't they? So when does that meet?
I think that is on a Thursday evening, I think.
It is?
Yeah,
that's
Thursday.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so if you're up for it, it's very loud as well, as you probably can hear, which I think some people find difficult to get used to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good entertaining sport.
Thank you, and that's all from the Open Day at Coventry Vision Hub, celebrating World Sight Day. Bye for now.
Oh, thank you, Dave. Thank you. Now we are coming towards the end of the programme, but I've got a little thought for you. Just before we go away, here's five little questions to ponder over for next week, when we'll give you the answers. Number one, what was Ghana's previous name? Number two, over which continent did the ozone hole form? Three, where is the pituitary gland? Number four, in which country was former Tory leader Ian Duncan Smith born? And number five, in which country would you find polders, P-O-L-D-E-R-S, and what are they? So there's some thoughts for you, answers next week. And that, I'm sorry to say, brings us to the end of this week's Outlook. So it's goodbye from me, Nigel Hewin, and all the team here.